Hurricane Helene has left a trail of death and destruction across southeast United States, most notably in a state our guest knows very well.
It's going to be a long road to recovery. I want in the moment to make sure people are staying safe, stay out of those floodwaters. It could be contaminated with pollutants.
Dr. Mandy Cohn is the director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and previously served as the top health leader in North Carolina. We're talking to her today about the health impact of this monster storm and also discussing why the country is lagging in COVID vaccinations so far this year.
Get one of those updated COVID vaccines, because the reason you want to get the updated COVID vaccine is the virus has changed.
This is Conversations on Healthcare.
Dr. Cohn, welcome back to Conversations on Healthcare.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we want to start off asking you about Hurricane Helene and the people affected by it. You have strong ties to North Carolina. You previously served as that state's Director of Health and Human Services. Can you share with our audience your thoughts and updates on the health situation?
Yeah, as a North Carolinian, my heart goes out to the western part of our state. It's going to be a long road to recovery. I want in the moment to make sure people are staying safe, stay out of those floodwaters. It could be contaminated with pollutants. Make sure that you're working with local, state, and federal officials who are on scene to help. So I know it's going to be a long road, but know that we are thinking of you and doing everything we can from across the federal government, state government, local government to make sure we can recover as quickly as possible out there. But we know it's going to be a long road.
Well, Dr. Cohn, we have North Carolina, Florida, Georgia, all under a public health emergency as we speak to you. And I know that, you're working to inform the public about the health dangers that still exist during the cleanup phase as well. What does CDC activity look like at this stage on the ground and remotely?
Well, public health overall is in a supportive role right now. And we're still in the very acute phase of the hurricane. So we want to make sure those who are in the response phase, making sure that they are doing the lead work. We are always willing to support as we go, but we want to make sure we're giving good recommendations. Like first, of course, stay out of those floodwaters. Make sure you're not driving into floodwaters. Please be heeding all of the advice and recommendations of local officials. But then, of course, making sure that we know people had power outages, which means food has spoiled in the refrigerator. Make sure you're not eating spoiled food. Our water systems, unfortunately, in Western North Carolina, I know have really gotten hard hit. So thinking about whether you need to be on bottled water. So those are the kinds of messages in the next couple of days. And then we get into recovery, where we know it's going to be a long phase. And we know things like we are likely to see more mosquitoes because we'll see standing water. Making sure folks are doing what they need to protect themselves with bug spray, trying to get rid of as much standing water around as we can. I know that can be very hard in these first few days here.
Let's just turn to another important issue. It's vaccination season for respiratory viruses such as COVID-19, the flu, and RSV. And according to the CDC, only 2.8% of adults have received one of the updated COVID vaccines since it became available about a month ago. That seems to be a terrible statistic, and I'm wondering, how can we do better this year?
Well, we're early in the season, and this is exactly why I'm joining the podcast today, to get the word out that the best defense that we can give ourselves, our loved ones, as we head into the fall and winter is to get an updated COVID vaccine, an updated flu shot, and if you're over 75, that RSV vaccine, and for our infants, an RSV immunization as well. So we have the tools, we need to use them, and I think we have all want to leave COVID in the rearview mirror, but it is still here with us. Last year, there were 800,000 hospitalizations between COVID, flu, and RSV. If we use these tools, we can cut that number in half. We know that vaccines work to cut hospitalization risk in half. So we know it's a really important defense. I'll be getting my COVID vaccine next week. I already got my flu shot. And so I wouldn't recommend something for the American people I wouldn't do for myself. So hope everyone's making their plan now in October to get their updated COVID flu vaccine and then RSV if it's right for you.
Great advice.
Perfect. I'll be right behind you. My husband was there on Saturday. But, you know, Dr. Cohn, it's, I think we've all struggled over these years of COVID, how much information is important for people. And maybe this is a little bit technical, but we know the Pfizer and Moderna COVID vaccines rely on the mRNA technology that people in this country learn so much about. There's also a traditional non-mRNA vaccine developed by Novavax. Can you explain the different options that are available this year to people and why might they want to know the differences?
Well, I would say you don't need to know the differences, just get one of them. And so get one of those COVID updated COVID vaccines, because the reason you want to get the updated COVID vaccine is the virus has changed. Mm-hmm. Even in the last several months, even from the summer, we continue to see the virus change, and you want to get the most up-to-date protection, and that is what this brings you. And just also, we don't want to forget about long COVID. No one wants to be sick, but particularly not for a long time. And even a mild infection could cause symptoms and long COVID. So again, another way to proactively try to protect yourself from long COVID.
You know, the CDC reported that 4 out of 10 nursing home residents had received an updated COVID shot since last fall. And the report really blames the situation on vaccine fatigue. You talked about it in terms of people want it in their rear view mirror, but it's not there. It's still right in front of us. And we're seeing so much inaccurate health information and vaccine hesitancy. I'm wondering what other ways to overcome these hurdles are out there for us. What other tools in the toolbox might we use to encourage people to understand the lethality of COVID and hopefully direct them in towards a primary care provider to get their shot?
Yeah, well, at the CDC, we still know that one of the most powerful voices is that of your own personal doctor. And one of the main reasons folks didn't get vaccinated last year is they said, well, my doctor, my nurse practitioner, they just didn't bring it up. So I assumed it wasn't for me. And we have been working really hard with the clinical community to not just make sure that they're recommending it, but to really embed it in the workflow from the time a patient checks in to putting out reminders. So to make sure that we are bringing folks in to get those updated COVID and flu shots. And I've been talking to the business community. Many of them had in-office flu clinics for many years. Great, have those again and add COVID, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're getting flu shots at the office, get a COVID in addition. Because remember, head-to-head, COVID still causes more hospitalizations and deaths than flu. So if you're used to getting that flu shot every year, you definitely want to add that COVID shot. If you're over 75, RSV as well.
Well, children, Dr. Cohn, have been a particular concern, of course, with both COVID and flu. And I think last year there was a drop in vaccinations and there was an increase in the number of children who died from flu, I understand, last year. What are we doing to try and make sure that doesn't happen, that it's both COVID and flu that we're really advocating for offices to provide, or the pharmacy or the school or wherever the kids are?
Yeah, I think we often forget, because the highest risk group are those who are over 65, which is right for both COVID and flu. We forget that our youngest kids are still at risk from COVID and flu. And particularly we're seeing with COVID, when kids get very sick from COVID and go into the ICU, half of those kids don't have underlying conditions, meaning we can't predict which kids get very sick, which is, again, why you want to get your kids vaccinated. So if they haven't had their primary series, and now we're seeing more kids who were born too young to potentially get that first series, we really want you to get that first series of the vaccine and then continue to do that year over year. Our little kids under 5, they have smaller lungs, smaller bronchioles, and can have these viruses overwhelm them more quickly. So particularly our young kids and those who are over 65, we want to make sure that everyone is getting their updated COVID and flu vaccines.
You know, Dr. Cohn, I was thinking as you were talking about Hurricane Helene and its impact in terms of standing water and making sure that people get rid of those mosquitoes. The CDC has confirmed over 10 cases of Eastern equine encephalitis, and a New York resident has died from the mosquito-borne viral illness. What's the latest on the health risk?
Yeah. Yeah, so something noticed, EEE, it's a mosquito-borne illness, but very rare, luckily, in the United States, and continue, even this year, continues to be rare, very rare. And we've seen about the same number of cases and deaths that we've seen in the past, so I don't think we're seeing more than usual. Again, very rare, but there are things we can do to protect ourselves, particularly if you're in the Northeast. You want to be thinking about wearing bug spray, wearing long sleeves, and of course, getting rid of standing water, which is a place where mosquitoes can breed. So good to be alert for it, and particularly wanting our clinicians out there to have that on their thought list if someone comes in with body aches and fever, to make sure you're checking for things like West Nile, dengue, and other mosquito-borne illnesses, depending on what part of the country you're in.
Dr. Cohn, I'm going to give you a minute's respite from flu, COVID, and all things that are going on in the infectious disease world right now. But I want to turn maybe to your experience over these this last year and a half. I think you're about a year and a half into your role as the CDC director. And we remember you took office with one of your focuses being on restoring faith in the CDC. Mm-hmm. Tell us how that's going. What are you satisfied with? What are you still working on?
Yeah, well, I'm very proud of the CDC. I just came from an all-hands meeting, which means that all, 10, 12,000 of our employees getting together to make sure that we are working together as one team. And I hope everyone is seeing that. One, I think we are communicating in a different way, communicating faster, more concisely, and in a more simple, common sense way so that folks know exactly what are the things they need to do in their lives to protect their own health and their family's health. Then I think we're also turning our data into action more quickly. And importantly, we're learning some hard lessons from the pandemic where we didn't have the infrastructure we needed, whether it was data or lab or the workforce training, to make sure that no matter what comes at us in the future, that we are ready for it. But it does mean us working differently in public health as one team across disease states. So we have experts in malaria and experts in HIV and experts in COVID, but we need one data system because we know our communities are experiencing all of that. We need a laboratory system that can be ready to respond no matter the health threat, and that we can scale up testing if we need it very quickly. And we need that response capability to really make sure that we're acting quickly. So I'm really proud of the progress we've made in that, communicating differently, turning our data into action, and being ready to respond. So I hope folks are seeing that. I've been sharing a lot that, when public health is working, it's invisible. And we need to be better storytellers about all of the ways in which public health is working to protect people's health every single day. I was mentioning the malaria that we heard was in the United States last year. It's not here this year. And that is public health working, right? That is public health doing its work to do the insect control and the monitoring and making sure we have tests and treatments, right? So those are all places where public health and CDC are working for communities every single day. And because it's working, it's often not seen. It's invisible. So we also have to be better storytellers about the work that we are doing each and every day. I'm really proud of what I see.
Well, just talk a little bit about public health during and after the pandemic. We heard all kinds of predictions that public health funding would be increased, yet the Trust for America's Health reports that state and local departments are still facing an annual shortfall of close to $5 billion that they need to provide comprehensive services. I know you're a great champion, not only at the CDC, but for public health departments across the country. How are you and your colleagues making the case to fund public health?
Well, one, you have to deliver, right? It's making sure folks understand the value of public health and show that we are delivering every day, but that it takes investment and resources to make that work possible. And remember, CDC dollars, 80% of the dollars that come to CDC go right back out to our state and localities, but then we need additional investments coming from the states and localities themselves. So I think it's both working at the federal level and at the state and local level to make sure that the resources are there. I certainly spend a lot of time on Capitol Hill, making sure folks know the work that we're doing, that we have learned important lessons, that we are a different agency, that we are ready to respond, but we need the ongoing resources to make that possible. And I am heartened when I see a proposed Senate budget that does increase funding to CDC going forward. That's not the law of the land yet, but I hope to continue to work with Congress to make sure that we have the resources we need to protect this country.
Dr. Cohen, thank you so much for your time. Please visit with us again in the future, and best of luck as you go forward through these days.
Thank you so much. Stay well, everyone.
Joining us now to continue our focus on public health is Dr. Georges Benjamin, the Executive Director of the American Public Health Association. Dr. Benjamin has been in this role for over two decades, and most notably during the COVID pandemic.
Dr. Benjamin, thanks again for sharing your thoughts as a guest on Conversations on Healthcare.
Thanks for having me.
We just heard from CDC Director Dr. Mandy Cohen on a number of issues. We want to begin by asking you about the public health challenges right now in the Southeast following Hurricane Helene. What are you hearing?
You know, the real challenges, of course, are making sure that people are safe and have shelter, getting access to portable water, safe food to eat. Those are the two biggest issues. But, you know, when you have these kinds of hurricanes that go through communities and devastate them as seriously as they had here, you value air safe to breathe, food safe to eat, water safe to drink, and a place to bed down where you're not going to be injured. It's amazing how you undervalue those things until something like this happens.
Well, thank you for that. And of course, our thoughts and prayers are with people. And we know there's also the trauma impact that people will be dealing with for a long time to come, and wish the best for all the healers there as well. Dr. Benjamin, we just marked Climate Week at the end of September. This was the first year that the week included a focus on the health impact of climate change. Now we have a devastating hurricane. Kind of brings it all home about this connection between climate and health becoming stronger to the public. What are you seeing within the Public Health Association and across the country about really taking note of this connection?
Well, the debate is over. I mean, anyone who thinks that we don't have climate change and that it's impacting our health today and our environment is got their head deep, deep, deep in the sand. It's clearly here today. I think we have to obviously work with adaptation, but it's time to do something meaningful to reduce, the long-term impact of climate change. We had, heat all summer, and it's still warm in many parts of the country. Now we're having these severe storms that are being generated by unusually, warm water conditions. And by the way, hurricane season is not over. We still have at least two systems that are, hopefully they won't develop, but look like they might be in the Gulf area today.
Well, that's, Hurricane Helene was enough, I think, but it won't stop coming at us, and we need to keep focused on it. Though we want to move on and talk a little bit about COVID. I think most Americans hoped it was in their rearview mirror, but it's not. And we note that APHA has messaging that the emergency is over, but COVID is not gone. I'm wondering where you're seeing examples of the most effective ways to encourage vaccinations at this time. I think the early data that we heard was about 2.8% of the people have gotten the COVID vaccine booster. What are you seeing is the best intervention strategy to encourage more people visit with their primary care provider and to take heed of the impact, the lethality that COVID presents?
We're telling people to normalize the COVID vaccine as part of their usual preparation for cold and flu season. So we have cold and flu season that hits us every fall the common cold, with influenza, with RSV for our older citizens, and now we have COVID to add to that. And so we're encouraging people to get their flu shot, to make sure if you're over age 65 to get an RSV shot, to get updated with the new COVID vaccine, which is prepared for the new strains that are circulating. reminding people that, yes, we did have a summer surge, but it seems to be on the downswing. But COVID appears to be, in many ways, bimodal. So we should anticipate having another ramp up of COVID sometime later this winter. So now's the time to get their COVID shot. And what we're telling people is the shot is safe and effective. It will protect you from the new strains, and to strongly encourage people to make that part of their routine respiratory tract prevention efforts.
Well, that message is so important about vaccine. I think we're all working at the local levels to do that. But Dr. Benjamin, I recently saw a report for those who do get COVID that there's actually very little understanding among the public about the availability of Paxlovid or the benefit of Paxlovid for people if they do get infected. Are you doing any messaging and public health education about this?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we're letting people know that, prevention is best. But if you do get COVID, to know the signs and symptoms, to get tested. And as you know, the federal government is now reactivating the free testing program, so you can get free tests and know what your disease status is. And then once you know you're positive, call your healthcare provider right away, and they will go through a series of conversations with you to ask whether or not you're eligible and should take Paxlovid, particularly people with chronic diseases. Older individuals should take Paxlovid. It will shorten their disease course and reduce their risk of really seriously getting long COVID.
You know, you stated, Dr. Benjamin, at one point during the pandemic that we, quote, must focus on renewing and rebuilding our long undervalued public health infrastructure. And I think we see health departments have been operating for decades really under persistent and widening resource gaps. I think I saw a figure the other day, maybe about a $5 billion deficit. So I want to ask you, why are we still seeing so many budget challenges for public health after we came out of a fairly successful transformation of public health's understanding by the public during the COVID period? It seems to have waned right now in terms of people's understanding of the value that public health can play.
Yeah, as a species, we still don't value prevention. We underestimate risk. We don't think of this as something that is an investment. So at the American Public Health Association, we have an effort called Speak for Health, where we're working to try to raise the visibility of public health to make sure to understand as a best buy, that when you spend a dollar on public health, you're spending it's a well-spent dollar for prevention. And, if there's nothing that will teach us this message other than COVID, think about all the other things that we do every day in our lives where nothing happens because we did something that prevented it from happening. Trying to tell people that something saved them from something happening when it didn't happen is a tough message to give, but we need to give that message each and every day.
Well, Dr. Benjamin, you certainly have an extraordinary pulpit from which to get the message out. And one of those is testifying before Congress about how the country can prepare for what we think are the inevitable future mass disease events. Maybe give us an overview of your thoughts about where you think the government has maybe made progress on this, not just dealing with COVID as we work through these years, but preparing for the next one. And where are we just not moving forward as quickly or as effectively as you think we should be to prepare?
We have learned some things, although I try to be critical when we need to.
Yep.
We've enhanced our surveillance systems. We now have a much more robust surveillance system that the CDC does. We do better forecasting at the national level, just like we forecast bad weather. We have a better job of forecasting emerging diseases. We have enhanced our ability to deliver vaccine. We have more vaccinators, more places for people to get vaccinated. The challenge we have now is keeping it up, because one of the things is we build these systems and then we let them degrade very quickly after the event is over. We have to make sure that doesn't happen again. And it's already happening to some degree. So we just have to continue to raise the alarm and push our elected officials to do this. This is an election season. And so during election season, it's an opportunity for us to get in front of legislators to give them our views on how best to protect the health of the public.
Dr. Benjamin, you have your annual meeting coming up in Minneapolis of the APHA. Couple questions. One, tell us a little bit about the size and reach of APHA. And then what do you expect to be the big insights and outcomes from the discussions you're having at the annual meeting?
Well, this meeting is being in Minneapolis, Minnesota. It's the last week in October. The theme is around trust in public health. We're looking to do a better job of educating our members about how to reinvigorate trust in public health and to help the public understand what public health is and to really elicit their support as part of that process. So we'll be sharing some of the best science. We'll have, as I tell folks, 13,000 of my closest friends that will be in Minneapolis for this meeting. And we'll be there for almost a week sharing the best science, networking on ideas, and working with officials both locally and nationally to try to engage them in the process of improving the public's health so that after the election, which is actually a week after our meeting, we can then interact with the incoming administration on ways in which we can ensure that every community in this country has the protections that it needs to improve its health.
I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about the impact that we're seeing that private equity is having in the healthcare systems around the United States, really impacting some of these rural hospitals and hospitals around the country. What are your members saying about it? What's the APHA's view of this blooming crisis that we're having?
Yeah, private equity is a challenge because people want that capital. They want that infusion of cash into the system. The problem is that venture capitalists are there to make money. They're not necessarily there for the mission of the organization. And so we're seeing in many places around the country where we have private equity that's coming in, they invest in systems, they maximize their profit. That often means closing services down, reducing access to care. And in many of our rural communities, when these private equity systems collapse, on occasion they do, then those communities are lost. They're left without the services that they need. So we need to step back as a health system, as a regulatory body at government, and we need to figure out how best to ensure that every community has the access to care they need. You know, we have far too many systems that we think we have in place. So we have many parts of this country, by the way, where there is not access to reproductive health care. I'm not talking about abortion. I'm also talking about just having an OBGYN to deliver a baby in that community. Far too many communities don't even have an OBGYN. We have far too many communities that don't have access to basic primary care. And so if we're going to have to, over the next few years, really step back and figure out how we properly finance our healthcare system, how we build upon the system that we already have, so we have a system with everyone in and nobody out. And just having an insurance card does not guarantee you access to care if there's no hospital or health facility in your community.
Well, thank you, Dr. Benjamin, for joining us. And just a reminder to everyone, please subscribe to our videos on YouTube, find us on Facebook and X with our account name CHC Radio. And as always, you can go online to chcradio.com to sign up for email updates. And please share your thoughts and your comments about this program with Dr. Benjamin. Dr. Benjamin, thank you so much for joining us and for your comments today.
Thank you.
This copyrighted program is produced by Conversations on Healthcare and cannot be reproduced or retransmitted in whole or in part without the express written consent from Community Health Center, Inc. The views expressed by guests are their own, and they do not necessarily reflect the opinion of Conversations on Healthcare or its affiliated entities.